So it's Mike Church, and I'm here with Dr. Brian McCall, who is now the editor of Catholic Family News. You're teaching now.
Yes, yeah.
Are you still teaching at the University of Oklahoma?
Or yes. Okay. Yeah, I teach law there.
Teaching law at the University of Oklahoma. And you live in Oklahoma City then?
Norman, Oklahoma. Near Oklahoma City.
Okay, so yeah. We're here at the Angelus Press Conference, and Dr. McCall said something to me last year, this year, at the Catholic Family News Conference in May, that I've told several people about it, and they all said, Mike, you're not explaining this correctly. Something doesn't connect. I said, well, I'll see Dr. McCall somewhere, or I'll get him an interview on the phone. So he's here, so I'm going to ask the question. So you started off your talk last Friday at Catholic Family News Conference with the story of the revolt in England.
Mm-hmm.
That was it, Norfolk?
The West Country. So
West Country, right.
Cornwall, Devon, so like the part of England that sticks out into the Atlantic.
Okay. Yeah. And it's a very emotional story. And you even mentioned my book, which I sold them all out of the English Reformation, of how they had this revolt against Anglicanism and against Henry. And of course, Henry wound up taking them out. The next day, you kind of followed that up and you started, you talked again, and then you made the distinction between, I think it was licit and valid.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Then at lunch, you and I talked, and I said, well, what if I'm 3 hours away from a TLM, traditional Latin Mass, but the Star Wars Mass is 5 minutes away, and my wife and I really don't want to go to it.
Right.
Now you say what?
So I guess if people want a longer answer, video that I did for the Conference of Catholic Family News that explores this question in a lot of detail is online now, so you can go to Catholic Family News.
Okay, so go to CatholicFamilyNews.com and you can get the video.
Or YouTube and you can see the video. So if you would like this answer and want more, you can watch the whole thing. But the shorter and more condensed answer, I would say, is you have to know a couple key principles. So the first principle is you can never be obligated to do something wrong to bring about something good.
Right? Okay.
You can never, and this is, you know, it's interesting, it's a basic principle, but it's one that's so skewed in our modern world, we forget it easily.
Okay.
Right? So you can never say, like, well, I want to end poverty. That's a good thing. So, but the way to do that is we're going to kill 500 people. But if we just kill these 500 people, we can never do that. It's never moral. You can never say, well, I'm trying to do something good or fulfill an obligation to the good. You can never do something wrong to fulfill that obligation. Or to put it in the Mass context, you know, I want to get to Mass on time. You can't run over a kid in the road because you're trying to get to Mass, you know, on time. And
understood.
That's your goal. Right?
Okay.
So again, that's the first principle. Second principle is we have to always distinguish between the third commandment and the obligation to hear Mass. Right. So the third commandment is of divine law. Divine law has no exceptions. So divine law, because God's perfect,
right,
he will always make a law that doesn't need an exception. So we always are obligated to honor the Sabbath, right? Now, remember, the third commandment doesn't say you have to go to Mass. It says you have to honor the Sabbath day. So we always have to do something on the Sabbath day to honor God. Then comes in the church, because God makes the divine law, and then human authorities, like the church, give us specific ways of doing that. So, you know, the church has a precept that says one way that you need to honor the Sabbath is to hear Mass on Sunday.
On Sunday. Right?
But whenever there's a human law, human laws are never perfect like God, so there's always exceptions. There are always cases where that specific law doesn't apply, and we have to fall back on the general. Right? So again, obvious examples for centuries, long before the new Mass, right? The church said you have to hear Mass on Sunday, but if you're ill, you don't have to hear Mass. If you know the details change, so back before cars and things, if you have to walk more than a certain number of miles to get to a church, you don't have to hear Mass. You're excused because there's a physical impediment to doing it. You don't have to do. But in addition to that, the church also always said, if there's a moral impediment, so if there'd be something morally wrong with you actually hearing that Mass that day, then you're excused if that's your only choice. So again, you brought up the Reformation, so it's another great example.
Right, right.
We tend to forget in history, in the very beginning of the Reformation in England, the priests that started offering, using Henry VIII's,
Edward VI.
Henry VIII sort of went with his church first and his false principles and separated from Rome. They were Catholic priests, right? And they were saying the Catholic Mass. So before Edward changed the Mass, they were still offering what we'd say, the traditional mass, but they had become schismatic and heretical because they accepted Henry's false ideas.
So it couldn't have been valid then?
No, it was still a valid mass. They're still, because they were ordained priests, and they were still using the form, they were using the matter, so it was a valid mass. But the Pope said, you can't go to their mass because they are heretical. You're going to be uniting yourself with these heretical sect. And then the same thing with Edward. Even when Edward's mass came in, they did change the mass. But remember, those first generation of priests had orders. They had been ordained as Catholics still.
Apostolic Rite of Succession. Yeah.
And so they could validly confect the sacrament. And again, even though we had done a lot of things to the mass, the form of consecration was still there. But again, the church didn't say, well, you got to fulfill your Sunday obligation. Just go to that, that Protestant
thing
to do it. The church said, no, you are excused from that obligation if there's no truly Catholic priest or Catholic mass around. So again, the principles are long there before the new mass. So that brings us to the question. If you know, and here's the longer part where you'd have to spend time, but if you know that the new mass is not licit, is not a true presentation of Catholic doctrine, if you know it's infested with ecumenism, if you know that it is basically an attack on the Catholic faith by removing from, in the words of Hannibal Bignini himself, remove from our Catholic rites everything that is not acceptable to Protestants, then it's the same thing as the Reformation. You can't say, well, I have to fulfill my obligation, so I'm going to go to this crazy Star Wars R2-D2 man. That is an insult to God, right? Because those things, we have an obligation to worship God in the way that's fitting for Him. And that's why we go. We don't go for ourselves. We don't go, I got to go to, go for Mass myself, primarily. We have to go for God. And if this thing is unacceptable to God, right, is offensive to God, you can't say, well, God, I'm going to go to this offensive thing so that I can fulfill my obligation to you.
What do you say to someone that says, well, that sounds, Dr. McCall, that sounds very Lutheran of you, that you're making an individual determination that it's offensive to God?
No,
what would you say to someone that, because that's the objection that I got.
Right.
Oh, so you know what offends God now, Mike.
No, the church does.
Okay.
So, Council of Trent. The Council of Trent defined what the Mass is.
That's what I wanted you to say.
Cardinal Ottaviani and Bacci, make very clear in their critical study of the new Mass. The new Mass, in both its whole and its parts, its details, is a striking departure from the definition of the Mass at the Council of Trent. So it's not me, it's the Church herself using her principles at defined it.
Here at the Angelus Press Conference with Dr. Brian McCall, we're going to wrap up here because I want to get your thoughts. Yesterday, we saw what could only be described as a pagan fertility ritual on the grounds of the Vatican at the start of this synod, right there, with the Holy Father in attendance, basically giving license or consecrating it or blessing it, whatever he did. Yeah. This was a pagan ritual to start this pan. I call it the Shamazonian Synod.
I call it the Pantheon of Synods.
The Pantheon of Synods.
Right.
If they revolt from the new Mass is a revolt from the old Mass, this is going to be another revolt. So they're going to revolt against themselves.
Right. Yes.
What do you think is going to come out of this?
So my reaction, again, as shocking as that was yesterday, as scandalous as it was, I think it's important to remember, though, Francis isn't the problem, right? Because there's a real danger here. People go, oh, it's just Francis. He's kind of like that crazy uncle, but once we get rid of him, everything will be all right. As bad as it was, this is not the first time. I mean, let's not forget, Assisi, 1986, John Paul II did the same thing. He had a statue of Buddha put on top of a tabernacle in the Church of St. Francis. He allowed shamans, all these pagan rites to go on right there with him doing the same thing. And so again, the problem is deeper than Francis, and it's not just
understood.
If we got a new pope, everything go
right.
Back
right, I understand. That.
It's a long. This he is just the poisonous ripe fruit of what's been going on for decades, and I think that's the lesson we should draw from this synod. That what may be good that God can bring out of this is some of these fruits are smell so bad that it'll wake up some people to say, you know what, maybe this path we've been on for the last 50 years, we don't like the place it leads.
And then, I think it already has.
Yes.
There were people yesterday, you can ask your colleague Matt Gaspers on social media.
Yes.
Matt was having some literary wars with people going like, said, okay, I see what you guys have been talking about, with a couple of exceptions of people saying, wow, now it just isn't.
Yeah.
My friend Bree Dale, who's a blogger and a writer, Bree said, She's there. She witnessed it.
Yeah.
She witnessed it, or she was directly.
Yeah.
She's either first party or second.
Yeah.
She said, "This is war."
Yeah.
Is this war, Doctor? Are we in a war?
Well, we know
our holy faith. Are we in
a
war?
We know we're. I mean, our Lord told us Himself. I've not.
Besides that war, yet. I mean, are we? Is this like a? Yeah. Is this a war going on?
It's
now?
It's a civil war within the church. I mean, it's a fight. For the soul of the church, you know, and the human element of the church. So, yes.
Does it surprise you the other day that President Trump used the term civil war to describe what's going on in the United States? Politically?
It's not surprising.
It's everywhere, Doctor.
And actually, our friend Dr. Rao, who was speaking here at the conference, you know, he would say this too. If you look at history in the long run, so goes the church, so goes the civil society or the nation.
That's right.
When the church is strong and flourishing, you have a good, strong, you know, government and civil, and things are in order. When the church is in civil war, it's not surprising that our country also would essentially be at a civil war.
So I told your colleague Matt Gaspers in the last interview I did with him right before your second video cast, I said, Matt, I've been telling my listeners, Protestant, evangelical, atheist, nothing.
Yeah.
Catholic Church is defecting. She's leaving the battlefield, ladies and gentlemen. You don't want to live in a world where the church has completely abandoned her legitimate, God-given and order teaching authority. You comment on that?
Yeah, and I guess I'd say the church the church will never abandon us. The
anthropological part.
The human element
the
of the
human
church.
Element.
The people that are occupying, I use that in the strongest term,
right.
occupying the offices of the church. Yeah, they are abandoning us, but you know, the church is still there. The church is, and that's why tradition is our only answer. What has the church always and everywhere taught? We need to just go back to that, because that's who will protect us when the shepherds are the wolves and are there turning on the sheep and devouring us. We just have to fall back on what Catholics always and everywhere did and believe. That's our only safe place.
Something strikes me. We'll close with this.
Yep.
Get your comment on it. The stage today has a beautiful statue of Our Lady of Fatima.
Yes.
Catholic Family News, I took photographs. Your stage was
yes.
beautiful, the way Our Lady
Thank
of
you.
Fatima was
Thank
framed.
You.
When I go to Brother Andre Marie's with the Benedictine yeah. brothers and sisters in Richmond, New Hampshire this week, Our Lady of Fatima will be on that stage. This is not a coincidence.
No.
That where you go, where tradition is, she always seems to be there.
Well, she's told us. Right? She says, I am your only hope. I am... In these latter days, when this war is on, she warned us. She said, "You know, I am bringing you your weapons. Right? It's the rosary, it's the personal sacrifice, it's the consecration of Russia. So, I mean, that ultimately is our way out of this civil war, right? Because we're not gonna beat these people. They
No.
are ruthless. The modernists, the Freemasons, they are ruthless. We're not gonna beat them, humanly speaking. And that's why she's our answer. So we have to play our part, right? She wants us to do our part and do what we can and write and speak and keep. But at the end, she says, in the end, she doesn't say, in the end, Catholic Family News will triumph, or this group. Well, she says, in the end, my Immaculate Heart will triumph. And we're just sort of foot soldiers in her army for her triumph. And that's gonna get us out of this.
Dr. Brian McCall, editor of Catholic Family News, thank you.
Thank you, it's good talking to you, Mike.